Saeed.
How you doing, Mel?
Oh my God, amazing.
I know. It is amazing whenever we get together to do another episode.
It honestly is.
I know.
Well, welcome to the pod, Two Writers.
Talking shit.
We have got a phenomenal guest here with us today.
Very.
She's a writer, she's a director, she's a choreographer, she's a soothsayer, an icon, the Asian American community. Please welcome to the pod, Roxy Sheets.
Yes.
Thank you.
Oh my God, now Roxy, you are a blessing that came into our lives through Lin Chen.
Yes, love Lin Chen.
I love
Queen.
Lin Chen.
You know Lin?
Yes.
How do you know Lin?
From Mel.
Oh my God, of course.
Of course. You know her? Yeah.
And now you know me through Mel.
And this is, yes.
The circle of life continues. And Lin was actually our very first guest on the podcast.
She was.
I saw. She oh my was. God, that's amazing. Yes. I miss her so much.
Yes.
We need to kiki.
Yeah, we do need to kiki.
Yeah.
Now, I feel like you're like me that you didn't grow up in this country. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay.
Well, a little bit of it. I didn't grow up in this country.
Okay. Now, Wikipedia tells me that you were born in the Netherlands.
Oh my God, you wikied me. I'm so honored.
I did it.
I was born in the Netherlands.
Nice.
I call myself a third culture kid. My parents and family are in Taiwan. Mm-hmm. And then we immigrated to the United States, New Jersey, specifically.
Nice.
When I was 7. Mm. And then came to California when I was 14. And then I turned 18. They were like, peace. We hate this country.
Oh, shit.
Honestly, nowadays, not surprised.
Yeah.
You know? And then they're like, bye, we fulfilled your American dream. Right. Taxes are too much. They went back home. And then I've been here ever since.
Nice.
Wow. So now, were you ever a kid in Taipei or you were living in Holland as a kid?
I was living in Holland.
Okay.
It's so cool that you call it Holland. I'm like, no one, I've never really heard anyone
call it Holland.
The Netherlands.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but Holland is so romantic. It's like,
Indonesia, we were colonized by the Dutch. So
yeah.
I grew up with a lot of Dutch influence.
I
in
feel
my
like,
life.
Sorry, but it's like, I'm not ethnically Dutch, but like,
no,
also, I lived there and I loved it. So I felt like, you know, there's like a little bit of survivor's guilt here.
No, listen, don't be sorry. It could have been so much worse.
Right. Oh well. Right, always, right?
Yeah. Okay, so yeah, so Roxy's like me. She's an international vixen, an international babe. Now, you've had this unconventional upbringing.
Uh-huh.
What was your entree into the entertainment business?
You know, actually what's really interesting was being the only child of an immigrant family, they're just like, you know, the stereotype is real. They're like, you are our biggest investment.
Nice.
Oh. Mm. Pressure.
Oh, right. And they're just like, so a lawyer's cool, a doctor's cool, but I'm like kind of stupid in terms of that sense. Like, I just could not live in a book long enough, right? And meanwhile, I'm like dealing with all of my guilt of being like this biggest investment that possibly cannot return, right? ROI is not ROI-ing, you know what I mean? So I'm just like, let me just make myself super busy with like all of these extracurriculars to make it seem like I'm really popular and busy, but then I ended up not really doing anything.
Yeah.
But I really love the arts. I've always been very, you know, expressionistic.
Mm.
And then so I went to UCI because I couldn't get into like the...
What's UCI?
Yeah, exactly. It's one of the UC schools. Irvine is one of the less popular. It's not like Berkeley or UCL. It's in the OC. Anyways, so I was there and I studied sociology because like maybe sociology could become a lawyer something.
But someday. To be a lawyer.
Like maybe if I read enough, I'll be more interested in reading more textbooks.
Uh-huh.
But that didn't happen. But it did get me very interested in studying people and society and how we work as communities and like how the environment affects us as people on a macro and micro level.
Nice.
And then along with that, my humanities requirement required me to take this film 101 class, right?
Fire.
Thank you. Yeah. And then like,
I took one. Yeah.
It changes your life.
Yeah. That's what started for me too.
Like fire. Like literally, I'm just like, how have I never seen movies before? But I saw The Umbrellas of Cherbourg, which is La Parapluie de Cherbourg. It's a French film, 1967, mm-hmm. Jacques Demy.
Mm-hmm.
And it fucked me. Like
it completely
fucked me. I was 19. I was in this lecture hall with a bunch of other students who just didn't care. And I watched it. And I just lost my shit. It was so heartbreaking, romantic. It was a musical. And then after everyone left, I just sat in my seat and I just thought, I'm a 19-year-old Taiwanese-American person here. This movie was made 4 decades ago in a language I don't understand with these people that I don't know. And in a way, it's like affecting me so deeply in a way that I can't really put into words.
Yeah.
What is that? right? Yeah. So then in that moment, I'm like, I don't care what it is. I'm like, I want to be a part of the magic. I want to do that.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know what roles there are, but that was the seed. And then I started like going to humanities film class. We didn't have a film production program. We had film studies. So I ended up doubling in film studies and soc. And then basically after that, I just started asking the question of what am I good at and where do I fit in? Mm. And then like ever since then, I've been like, you know, that whole feeling of I never went to film school, therefore I can't be good enough.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So then in all of my 20s, I was just trying to question that. But now I'm really successful and, you know, I'm really fucking amazing at what I do. So it's fine. Like, we took a huge jump here. But,
whoa.
But it was, you know, after that, it was like I moved out to LA on a whim because I just thought I could either move to Taiwan, where I've never really lived,
mm-hmm.
And be with my parents, where they would want me to lose 60 pounds, you know, or B, it's like I just try something in Los Angeles and see where the fuck it goes.
Yeah.
What's dope about that, though, is that one, you were at the right place to witness that in the right class that locked you. But then you happen to be in the right place, because if you went there, you wouldn't be able to do that there.
Yeah.
And so being in Los Angeles, I think, is a key. And it was funny because it's this book that talks about when you're a creative, sometimes it's just being there. Like Rick Rubin, he said if he hadn't have went to school in New York, he wouldn't have been there for the birth of rap music, which put him on. And sometimes it is your location just as much as that want and desire. So I think that's dope about your story.
And that's amazing, right? Because like in social, I was talking about environments affecting people. It's like we're in this room with all of these plants.
Yep.
And it's like a plant will grow differently in different environments, right? And so I was dealing with all this imposter syndrome and like, well, I never, you know, I don't have this education. What's a C-stand? What's an AD? Like, I don't know. But it doesn't really matter, right? Because like, you're in a community that fosters growth if you choose to bite that bullet.
Love it.
Right? So then 10 years, 12 years, I don't know how long it's been ever since then, but I basically got my feet dirty through post-production first as an editor.
She edits.
She was first an editor back when we did Final Cut 7 before the Avid and Premiere Dane. Right?
Fancy.
And then I basically got my skill there through being able to not be precious about certain things, really cutting the fat, getting to, you know, really what we're talking about, you know? So I'm really grateful for that. I did editing for many years, and then I was like, I hate this. Just kidding. I loved it, and I was really insecure, but I ended up getting like laid off. So, you know, I said I got sick of it, but really it was because the universe was just like, you're not for this.
Yeah.
And then I just thought, well, okay, I don't like being an edit bay by myself for 6 to 8 hours.
Right.
Like, what am I truly meant to do?
Yeah.
And I'm like, A, love people.
Yeah.
Yes.
B, love cool ideas.
Yes.
Right. And I'm like, C, I get excited about the idea of putting things together and manifesting them into reality. What
yes,
is that?
We love that. That's like our favorite thing. I mean, money first, that second.
Oh, yeah. And I was delusional and I had no knowledge. I was like, what is that? And then people were like, it sounds like you're like a producer. And I'm like, what's that? Right?
Yeah.
So then I did the whole thing where I just went on Craigslist and I'm like, willing to learn.
Yeah.
So I like met all these great crazy people, made D-list movies.
Oh.
I made features for like $20,000-$30,000. Yeah. I met some of the most brilliant, like macabre people.
Honestly, for Craigslist, I would say a $20,000 to $30,000 budget is pretty impressive.
Pretty amazing. Also, you've done it too, Mel.
Mel acted in a 5,000 one that she talks about a lot. It worked.
Was worth every penny.
All five Ks. Which is $5.
Which is all the $500 that I got.
Which is, oh.
Yeah.
Poor BB.
No.
And then I slowly after that, it's like I made a feature for this amazing director called Jason Cartalian for $20,000.
Yeah.
And I was 23 and bushy, you know, bushy tailed and bright eyed. And he was like, oh, you're just a kid. Like, what could you know? You know, but then I brought together all these really cool people that I've met, just like freelancing, doing free stuff. Mm-hmm. I was tireless and chaotic when I was a lot younger and it served me at the time. And then, and Jason taught me a lot because he saw me saving like $2,000 to $5,000 every year to like make a short film with my friends on a DSLR. Mm. And he's like, Roxy, I see you like winning these cute awards, right? And mm-hmm. he goes, but let me tell you, like, no one's going to take you seriously unless you make a feature film. Mm. And at that time, it was before all of this inclusion, diversity mm-hmm. conversation yeah, yeah, was yeah. happening. Mm-hmm. And as a Capricorn, I was really pragmatic. Thank you, sister.
Kayla fist pumped over there. Our producer just fist pumped.
So I like came back at Jason and I was like, I got stats. I was like, 2% of female directors actually make it in the industry. Making it doesn't mean visibility. Uh-huh. Making just means working. And I was like, look at me. I am an Asian woman. Yeah. And I'm like, I will not make it. And I was like, I was being very cynical about it. And then because I helped him out so much in his feature and his feature was amazing and did well, he's like, all right, well, you could take my red camera because that was all the rage back then.
Oh, no. Yeah.
Side note, coming from the music industry, all we wanted was red camera shot videos.
Yeah, what?
Because it was so, for some reason, it was so crisp and so like just... crispy, yes, crunchy. It was crispy, crunchy.
Fresh.
Like crispy. Anytime a director would like, I got to a point where I was like, I only want red videos. Ooh. Like I was just an arrogant rapper. I was like, get out of here with your 5D. I need the
exactly.
You know what I'm talking about?
I want a Sprite. I don't want a lame ass still water.
There we go. Crispy,
like a McDonald's Sprite. Yeah,
exactly.
Like a spicy Sprite.
Yes, exactly. So
reds are spicy Sprites.
So you got a red?
Well, okay, so that didn't happen. But he offered it to me and he was like, he's a partner at Burns and Sawyer, the rental house at the time. And he goes, anything you need, because you helped me out on my feature, he goes, you can have.
Yeah.
And he's like, now you have a camera in your hands. What is your excuse? And that just
chills.
Like,
I just got chills.
Right. So I just felt, I'm Iron Man. Like,
I'm
just like, what is my excuse? What is my excuse?
Yeah.
You know, like, mm-hmm. why am I so, I'm afraid of like people not liking my shit. Like, of course, when you're young, you think that, right?
Yeah.
But then it was in my head. And then 2 weeks afterwards, I was working on this music video. I was in post with like this editor friend of mine. I was producing, I wasn't directing it. And then he's like, hey, Rox, like, I got the script. He's like, that I've written a few years ago that like, at Art Center. He was like, that my professors really loved. And he goes, can you just take a look at it and see if it's worth making? Because at the time I was producing a lot, right? So then I read it and like, all of it, you know, like when you complain about life or people complain about life, they're saying like, oh, I just don't want to be here. Like, why can't I get out of this rut? Like, why am I stuck as an editor and I can't move and transition? Mm-hmm. But all of these are tools in your tool belt, experiences that other people don't have that make you unique. Facts. Right. And then so I read the script and I mentally broke it down and I'm like, I can make this for $100,000 confidently because it was one major location. 5 actors. And the script was, you know, from a female perspective, it's about like, it's about a pandemic. Right? Wow. Oh my God. I'm like a psychic. Right.
But she literally is a psychic. She reads tarot cards.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
He's never had his cards read before. By the way.
Oh my gosh. Offers on the table. Only if you're willing. Anyway.
I might take you up on that at some point. Yeah.
But it's weird because I didn't think anybody would care. I didn't think anybody would help me.
Yeah.
I did a Kickstarter and I went to my parents and I'm like, hey, I never got a master's degree and I never got your return of investment. Because I don't know how to read a book. Yeah. But consider this my grad school. However you're willing to help. And then they're like, we don't know about this. My dad, I remember he said this to me. He's like, okay, we're going to help you a little bit, right? Which I think is really significant. And for that, I am privileged. I acknowledge that. And my dad said, if you do not get your first directing job from this, you need to do something else. Consider
that's
this.
Pressure, though. You didn't feel the pressure?
Yeah, that is pressure. Welcome to being an Asian child.
Welcome to being an Asian child.
Because the funny thing about that is most people, their first thing they shoot doesn't even go to completion.
Exactly.
Like I know directors who've shot shorts and just they shot it and it never made it past editing.
Hard.
Yeah, so that's a real damn. That's pressure.
Right.
It's pressure.
He's like, you got to do something else because they don't see it happening. So of course they're just protecting me, right?
Yeah.
And then I just said, okay, give me the money.
Man, I love it.
Fine, whatever. Give me the money, please.
Whatever you say.
The movie bombed.
It's all right. Yeah.
Doesn't matter. You made it.
Thank you.
And that's a lot more than a lot of people.
Yeah, because everybody, all you know, the first-time filmmakers, we were just having discourse like, oh, yeah, like, you see those ones who make Sundance. You see, you're just like, that is a formula. Like, that is the way to become successful and be an in-demand director. And at that time, I was just consumed with the idea of having long-term longevity rather than, like, no, really knowing what my voice is.
Yeah.
And in a way, that helped me.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not going to say it hindered me, because in reality, it made me who I am today.
100%.
You know, so I was like, I never watched horror films, but now I'm like a genre director.
That's tight. That's fire.
You know, but that's because when I was producing, you know, like, genre is where you could really make the most out of your meal, right? Yeah. And your opportunity. So then I just, so The Tribe, which was my first film, is sort of what I call a futuristic sci-fi western, like, it's sort of sci-fi western
type,
right? And a thriller movie. Mm-hmm. And it stars Jessica Roth from Happy Death Day, you know, and Annie Winters from 13 Reasons Why. And it was like way before they were even known. And I was just like so grateful. We shot it for 13 days in Palmdale, right?
Wow.
For and then we made it for like close to $100,000 completed from prep to post. Yeah. And then we got it out there, and it didn't make any of the big festivals. But what I can tell you was, it's not about like everyone loving your film. It's not about getting a fresh rating right away. You know, you just need to reach one or two people's eyes that really believe in it and are really moved by it. Like what happened was, I did get my first directing job after I got two, actually.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Like, first I was at a genre festival in Austin, and I met this director named Tony Valenzuela. Love him. And he had a movie with IFC at the time called Axe Murders of Villisca. And he and I became instant friends.
Time.
I missed his movie, but he came to mine. And he watched it, and he was just like, Roxy, this is terrifying. And I'm like, oh, good. Right? Thank you. But he was basically being considered to direct this genre film.
Uh-huh.
And in his pitch, he's like, y'all gotta meet this girl. You know?
That's
so
fire.
I think at that point, that was my first example of somebody being at the table, moving aside and giving a seat for me.
Wow.
You know? And then the producers met me, and then they were like, well, we love her, man. Sorry. You know?
That's
he
tight.
Goes, no, please, like you should hire Roxy. And he's queer, Latino, you
That's
know,
tight.
Like older than me, but like, that was my first example of like, it's not about competing for that one seat. It's just about making space.
Yeah.
And so I did Painkillers the year after, and then the lead of The Tribe, Michael Nardelli, I didn't know he was a producer. Surprise! And he was like, hey, you're really good at this. I'm like, I am! And he's like, I'm developing like a series. You know, that was supposed to be a web series, but somehow it expanded into like this Amazon thing.
Yeah.
And I ended up directing season one. So, come on, Dad, I showed you, okay? I got two big jobs afterwards. And like, now your daughter's like, here, like, cut me some slack.
That's fire, though, because I'm reading this book right now by Rick Rubin. I talk about him a lot, but it's called The Creative Art and The Artist's Way. And he talks about like something that, you know, resonates with your story is like, you just need a step. You got to stop looking at each. Rick Rubin says, stop looking at each project as like your whole career.
Yes.
He's like, look at it as like one step. That way you eliminate the pressure. And then also it's way more realistic because you don't really have control. Like he talks about, you make it, you can't control what happens after that, which like you were saying, like you don't have no control over what the Rotten Tomatoes or any of that type of shit is, or what the budget is, or you know what I mean? So I think that's dope that you didn't even know you were doing that. Like you're like, yo, I'm gonna just complete this movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's
It's actually a spiritual journey, right? Like we, it's so interesting how like we don't talk about that as often in the movie business because it becomes so toxic.
Yeah.
And really it's like, it is spiritual because you have to be so present.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you're writing, you have to be in it. You know what I'm saying? It can't just be like, oh, let me write 3 minutes and go and do something. You're so locked in. You have to feel some sort of alignment. Same thing with directing. It's like, I'm in some sort of fugue state, but I'm super focused like during blocking and when I say rolling and then cut and then everything else is miserable because I'm dealing with logistics and mm-hmm. you know production, mm-hmm. but in that moment I'm in euphoria because I feel completely connected with whatever it is I'm doing. And as I've gotten in my career, I'm sure you two feel the same way as well, but it's like I care less and less about the outcome.
Yeah.
It's always about the work. Like wherever it goes doesn't fucking matter. Like whatever, you know, like because when you get it, I've been there, like I went to the Emmy Awards, I had a nomination. I got a Critics' Choice nomination.
Right. Come on.
I saw Tyga like right there.
Come on.
And I was just like I was just trying to blow some wind, and then like if he could feel my breath on his head. He never turned around. And then I said Tyga, and then he turned around, but I like looked away. So like
It's probably a lot of people blowing in his direction.
Right. But I like to think he felt mine.
Okay,
I'll figure it out. Yeah, because if you're listening to this, call me.
Yeah. Roxy DMs are open. Not just to Tyga, but to the general public, you know? If you're sexy. If you're sexy.
Stick around. We'll give you the Instagram later.
If you got what the Gen Z call Riz,
There's so many gems in like... every single thing that Roxy says, but there was like a few things that like jumped out at me. One, I've literally never heard anyone describe what you're talking about with directing as being in a euphoric state, because a lot of times with writers, like, we talk about like being in flow, right? Mm-hmm. When I was performing regularly doing stand-up, that's exactly how I felt. Every moment that preceded like walking up and like standing in front of the microphone, and then every moment after, trash, right? And then actually, and you have to be 100% present with stand-up, right? Like there's no, like your brain cannot travel for like 1 second to another location.
Right.
If you're bombing, it feels like you're dying, right? Mm-hmm. But then it's like, if it's going well, there is no drug that can like touch that high. It feels absolutely euphoric. So it's just like, I just think it's really interesting like describing directing in that way. Because I'm like, oh no, I know what that feels like. That's, I know that high. That's how
we're fucked. Because it's like, no matter how shitty
this
experience is, it's like, I just came off of a like an amazing but horrible production, and it was really challenging. It wasn't horrible. It's very fucking challenging. Like the most challenging shoot I've ever done in my life.
Wow.
And the entire time, you know, my mom, you know, whenever I had a chance to call her, she'll do that Taiwanese thing where she's just like, well, you chose this, right?
And then I have that talk with myself every day, right? Okay. I'm my own Taiwanese mom.
You gotta be gentler with yourself, maybe, because your mom, that's what mothers do, you know. My mom's just like, this is Li Chen De Lu, right? And I'm like, and I'm just, and then I had to go back with her, and I'm like, in Buddhism it says we choose our suffering, you know?
That's funny.
And I choose this suffering over and over again because that euphoric state is and that alignment is just like, what, like there's nothing else that compares to it.
Yeah.
You know, I think when I was in college and like being a dumbass and like being like, what's sociology, and like not being able to envision my future. And then I remember like making this really dorky little short film. Like I had no concept what anything was, but I just started writing. And then like Desmond Chum, who is now, you know, a huge star, like he's in Joyride, he plays like the sexual object of stuff. Like he's in everything. He's in everything now, but he's like the hot Asian man.
Yeah.
Love you, Desmond. He's also incredibly intelligent. He had like a law degree before. Anyways. And then he was like in my short film, and then we were just playing around, and I just remembered I felt so moved when it came together, because I said, everybody talks about making your dreams come true, but if you're a writer, if you're a filmmaker, you have the ability to do that.
True.
Mm. You know, you have the ability to write any of your dreams come to life. Like, that's your power. It's in your pen. Now, the horrible part, not the horrible, I need to change it. Sorry, neurons reattaching. Challenging part. Challenging is the right word. Is like, for example, I'm in that euphoric state in production. Now I'm in post. I just delivered my director's cut. I have like how many rounds of producers to go through. And everybody, of course, needs to put their stamp on it, because if they're not doing it, they're not doing their job. But for me to be able to stand up and defend my choices every single time,
mm-hmm.
right? So it's like, all right, everybody gets a say, and maybe everybody gets a chance to like put their stamp on the movie. But if it's like a film that like this movie, I literally like micromanaged I've never been like that. Like, I've micromanaged every frame. I was very specific about everything, you know, because it's a good film. And I'm really excited about it. But it just, I feel like that's the cost sometimes, you know? But we're also so grateful to be here. Mm-hmm. You know, like I'm always, I get really, you know, angry sometimes, and then I vent to friends and like colleagues about everything. But looking back after some time, all you feel is gratitude because you're just like, fuck, I'm really fucking talented.
Yeah. Yeah.
And all my friends are geniuses.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's
crazy. Like, you're a genius, you know?
True.
So I just met you. I'm pretty sure you are too.
He is. Of course he is. Of course he is. Of course he is.
All right. So let me ask you one question, because you are talking about like collaborating and stuff like that. Mm. Like, where, how do you, like, for people out there that don't really understand the collaborative process and you talking to like producers and stuff, how do you go about sticking up for your own voice in a sense? Because that is a sticky situation where you have to like fight for a certain part of your work. Like,
defending your choices, like you were saying.
I'll be very honest with you.
Please.
I am still working on it.
Yeah.
I was a people pleaser for most of my life.
Me too, yeah. Yeah, I think all three of us.
I mean, I think writers, it's so tough because you have to go through whatever it is that you wrote on spec.
Yeah.
It's what I go through too, but it's like at a different stage, right?
Yeah.
And it could be infuriating because sometimes you're just like, if I had more clout, maybe. And it is about clout. They would see you differently because back when I was nobody, nobody really listened. Now that I have more clout, everyone listens. So I'm not blind to that. You know, it's just how the nature of the beast sort of operates. But what I do feel, to answer your question, Saeed, really helps me is that I have a producer that fucking gets me and fucking gets it.
Yeah.
Like, I just had the best producer I've ever worked with. Neil Elman, I love you, on this past movie. He fucking, the whole movie was on his back. Like,
that's tight.
People weren't willing to do it. He fucking did it. Like, he is the best. And he's been in this industry for 25 years. He's done so many movies, and he has a different vision of what he wants to do now. And he's always been like, you decide, I support.
Yeah.
He's like, you know, and I would feel strongly about something, but he would always know the right way to communicate with me.
Yeah.
If something isn't working. And I feel like you just have to find your person, you know, or persons in that case. Like, you really gotta be like on the same page with, you guys gotta have the same vision, because if not, and you feel that right from the beginning, it's a sign that it's gonna be a rocky road ahead, because you're not making the same movie. Mm-hmm. Like, so many times people have been like, no, yeah, we really want Roxy. But then also I'm like, okay, well, this is what I think.
Right.
And then they'll be like, yeah, but we need to keep all of this stuff. And I'm like, but that's everything that needs to change.
Right.
And then they're like, yeah, but we really need, we want you. And I'm like, this is transactional because you're just using me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, let's be real about it. Like, let's call it out.
Yeah, you want my name. You don't,
You want me at this moment before, because, you know, you could feel it. You could feel it.
Yeah.
And so I just want to be very intentional about everything. And now I could just be like, oh yeah, this person's in it for the reasons I am. Like, I'm not interested in making this type of movie anymore. Like, I'm looking at this and I believe it could happen at this level. And they're like, yeah, same shit. You know, let's fucking do it. And if not, that's okay. We still got each other and we'll figure out another way for it. So like, as I get older and I have more experiences, it's not about like your DP, just your DP or your production, whatever. It's all of it. It's like literally all the people, as much as you can, all your creative people, like as much as possible, giving their dedication to the integrity of the art rather than just like, but I know there's a balance, right? Because now we're on a strike, so no one's working and everyone's poor. I'm like, I realize I'm on this soapbox right now, but
intentionally, nah, we need it though. No.
But truly, it's like, I've been in that situation where I said yes to everything.
Yes.
And it led me nowhere.
That's a bar.
Yeah. Wait, can you talk to us about that energetic shift that you had when you started to look at jobs differently and like how that changed the kind of jobs that came to you?
Oh, did I tell you?
I did.
I did tell you. So last year, was it 2022 last year? Yeah.
No, the COVID didn't.
I don't know.
I can add two on everything.
I was just like, my ass has been clenched since 2016. It hasn't been unclenched. I just been clenching this whole time. I don't fucking know. The world is just crazy. Anyways, we got nominated for a Critics' Choice Award last year for this movie I did called List of a Lifetime.
Come on.
That stars Kelly Hu and Shannon Doherty. and Patricia Velasquez. Basically, everybody in the Mummy franchise that I thought was hot growing up, like, yeah. I would just want it. Anyways,
that's dope. That's dope.
Thank you. And, you know, we made it for very little. Like, it wasn't meant to be, like, this big thing, but I had a lot of heart, and it got a nomination at that level. And I just thought, oh, so cool. You know, I made eyes with Andrew Garfield, met the whole, like, cast of Pose.
Oh,
you
shit.
Know, India Moore, like, follow yeah. me on Instagram. Like, literally,
yeah.
Right?
You blew on Tyga.
Yeah. Tyga. And then, you know, met Squid Game when I was really drunk. And that was not good because they're just like, wow, Asians here are really loud. You know? And I'm like, sorry. You know, I was really drunk.
Sorry.
And but it was weird because, like, at that time, I'm like, okay, well, now I'm in this room and it doesn't feel so far away. Like,
right.
everyone feels like just colleagues.
Yeah.
Where before I was like, oh my God, I don't deserve to be here, right?
Right.
I had a moment where I just thought, okay, well, I was always chasing a paycheck.
Mm-hmm.
I was just always paycheck to paycheck. I just needed money to live. I didn't really think about my voice because I'm like, it's an honor to be a director, right?
Right.
But after that, the universe was just like, fuck no, bitch. If this is where you could get, just doing a whatever, like, you could just do in your sleep type of film, imagine how far you could go if you actually show people who you are. And that was a moment because I felt weird coming back from that awards gala. And then we got nominated for a few more down the line. We attended so many that year. And then it was, you know, it's that feeling when you know things are changing where it happened,
mm-hmm.
but it doesn't feel as euphoric as you thought it would.
Mm-hmm.
And then so anyways, after that, I'm like, this is where the big things happen now, right? What do I do now? What do I do now?
Yeah.
And then, you know, a job came along. It was at the same level. I was invited to do like sort of like a TV movie.
Uh-huh.
And then and nothing was different. The rates weren't higher. Nothing was, you know.
Yeah.
And I just said, I can't do this anymore. And my manager also, who I fucking love, I've been with for 4 years.
Come on.
I really love my team. I'm with APA, now called IAG.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
all of them are changing names,
though.
They're all
changing now, yeah. And then they're the team that's like, oh, Roxy, say no.
Aside.
Just say no, you know? And they're like, this isn't for you, say no. And I'm so scared. I'm like, what if I lose it? What if I don't get it, right?
Yeah.
And then Seth was like, Rox, he's like, this is going to be the hardest part. He goes, but everything's going to change after this. I promise.
Come on.
And I go, what am I going to eat?
Yeah.
Right? And then I talk to my parents and my mom. My parents have definitely changed their whole perspective on me. Because
Yeah, you've been at awards and everything now.
I know, they get to talk to all of their friends and be like, oh, Roxy.
Yeah, she's the star of the, she's our star kid.
Yeah, yeah. She's just like dining with the stars.
She blew on Tiki. Yeah, his head.
You know, and then it'll be like, how much money do you have in your bank account?
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. But like, so then my mom said something to me, which I was really touched by because she goes, in Chinese it says, 你蹲越低，你跳越高, which means the lower you squat, the higher you jump.
Wow.
And if you squat, your thighs burn, right? If you squat even lower, they burn even more. You have to go through this painful process, this discomfort in order to leap higher.
Wow.
And then I said, okay, well, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to say goodbye to this former life, which means also having that hard conversation with these producers being like, I appreciate you feeding me for the past few years, but I would like to leap in a different direction. And they were sad, but like, you know, it's bittersweet. And then I just thought, all right, well, what the fuck? Here we go. I guess I'll just write a feature during this time, right? Mm-hmm. And so I wrote a feature with my co-writer, Dennis McGee Fallon, who's amazing. Mm-hmm. And like, the script got a lot of attention. And like, I feel like it's in a good place now too. And then, but then the money was going away. Like, I have to be really real about this practical
part. Please, no, we love the realness.
Right? Yeah. It's like credit cards. Like, I was relying on my tarot readings, which were really great, but it's like more like gas money, right? Because I don't do a lot of them for a lot of reasons, mostly because it's energy. But so then my savings were dwindling down.
Yeah.
I had to like go to my parents again and I'll be like, so maybe I should go work at a coffee shop. Like, I'm not above that. Like, I'm down for it.
For
like,
sure.
I've done it in my past and I've always enjoyed it. Maybe I should just Uber drive again. And my parents strangely were just like, you need your focus.
Wow.
And like, focus on this feature you're writing. And they'll be like, what do you need? 2 months rent? Like, you could just pay us back when you are back on your feet again.
Wow.
And I just thought that is such, I'm so lucky to have, again, I would like to acknowledge my privilege. Like that is something not everyone gets to have. And then so by like month six, I was so defeated because I'm, you know, I just don't know what was happening. And Seth every day, he's like, just be patient, Roxy. You just got away. And I'm just like venting to him and like getting emotional about it because you have no control. Right. Nah, so like you just said, but the proof is in the pudding. Mm-hmm. Like my work is out there. And then so crazy, crazy shit happened on a Monday like month six. Uh-huh. Right. This TV show I worked on last season, they were like, hey, Roxy, we're going to do season two of this show, like back in Toronto. Uh-huh. And then they're just like, you did such a good job. We'd love to have you back. It's with Eli Roth. And Eli, we love you back. And then he's like, and also you could kick off the seasons by doing episodes one and two.
Oh, that's fire.
And so I'm like, fuck.
That's crazy.
And then you're like, yes.
Fuck.
Yes, of course I would love to open a season. Amazing. Actually, no, I mean, yes, let me check my schedule.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
let me check my schedule. That is completely empty right now. Yeah. But even wilder than that was like, I'm like, yeah, I have a job opportunity Tuesday.
Oh, shit. Please. I love this.
My reps came to me and were like, hey, Rox. There was this producer named Neil Elman, who has been courting me for years, trying to find something to work on together. He goes, there's a script that he has that he wants you to read. That's slated to go later this year.
Love it.
And then I read the script. It was called, it's the one I just shot, actually. Yeah. And then I read the script and I was just like, this is my fucking film.
I love it.
And then like I pitched for it. And like with both production companies in the room, I was like, I don't care who else you're talking to. This is mine. You know, and it was kind of interesting because I sort of set the standard that like, I want to make this amount now and I want my budgets to be at this caliber. And it happened.
I love it.
And even like my reps, even like when dealing with like the offers and stuff, I was like, oh, this is like really low when they first offered me my rape. And then she swung back 5 times. And it ended up happening.
Yes,
like
Roxy.
Even beyond what I thought possible for myself.
Yeah.
I was rewarded after squatting
so low,
so fucking long.
Yeah.
After having so many mentee bees during those 6 months.
Yeah.
While trying to be a spiritual leader for all those who required my counsel, including Mel. Yeah.
That's true.
But meanwhile, slowly crumbling inside. But after it happened, and I'm so grateful. I'm so grateful. It's like I got to do this fucking cool ass movie in Newfoundland, where the Titanic submersible thing happened. Well, anyways, but positivity, Roxy. but yeah, it's like, and after that, all the meetings that I've been in ever since are different.
I love it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so the ranges are different.
Yeah.
The people are different. And the conversations are also different. And I feel like I finally have this ability to talk at this higher level and really be very specific about my perspective, which is the reward.
Yeah.
You know, you have the microphone in front of you. You have the ability and the space to speak and for people to listen. So with that, that was the biggest turning point.
Reliving I love
that.
It.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love it.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it's funny because I always talk about I worked at a shitty job for like 20 years and I stayed there way too long.
What was it?
It was at a record store and it was dying and people used to come in all the time. The thing I loved the most was people be like, you still here? Like, you love nothing more than working a shitty job for 20 years and they saying, you still here? Or here's another one. You don't own the place yet?
Oh, it's like, shit.
Man, like, shit. Do you own the place you work at? Like, you know what I'm saying? But the funny thing is that the whole time, like you, I used to write down my goals over and over again on a piece of paper every day. And I'll crumble up at the end of the shift just to remind me why the fuck I'm here.
Yeah.
And I'm not this job.
Yeah.
And I think that's the thing that, like, writers got to understand. Like, yes, it's a hard road. It's a road that you don't really see the road in front of you. But if you want to do that shit, I really feel like the only people who don't make it are the ones who quit.
Yes.
Period.
Yeah. It's tenaciousness. It's like this, I mean, we're a generation of delusion, but like.
For sure.
It's, but you're so right. It's like, 23-year-old Roxy, the one that didn't go to film school, but was like, I'm just going to go to LA and move someplace and live in a living room with somebody for a few months just to see what happens. You know, and I sent out every resume, no calls, because I had no foot and I didn't know anybody, right? But for some strange reason, despite all the scammy shit that I went through, door-to-door soliciting I did, like, and just the bizarre experiences, I just thought, something is meant for me here.
Yeah.
And I'm bigger and greater than this, in a way that I don't understand quite yet.
Facts.
You know? And then now it's like thinking, like even just talking about this now, because only when you really verbalize it do you really start thinking about it. But it's like, my gosh, like really, if I could go back and like have a conversation with my younger self and be like, whatever you envisioned, it gets better by like exponentially, bitch.
Yeah, come on.
You're gonna be a bad bitch.
Come on.
You know?
I love it.
Thank you.
I love it.
Okay, I feel like that this is the perfect final note.
Oh,
Saeed does have a question he loves to ask at the end.
I do have a question I love to ask.
Okay. Yeah. DMs are open.
DMs are open.
Matter of fact, what is your Instagram?
It's just Roxy Shee.
Okay. R O X
Y.
Yes.
S.
Yes.
H.
Okay, there we go.
Okay.
Everybody got
aroused in the studio.
I also have a podcast called Two Horny Goats. You can also listen to
that.
It's just me and my best friend. We're both Capricorns talking about stuff.
I love
it. Two people talking about stuff.
I love it.
Just love talking.
Okay.
Yeah.
What are three things that you're excited about right now? One is, what are you listening to? What are you watching? And what are you reading? So, number one, what are you listening to right now that you're excited about? It could be music. It could be a podcast.
I am really late on this. I just watched Tar.
Oh, fucking.
I know it's not a movie for everybody.
That movie.
To me, I thought it was a masterpiece.
Yeah.
I just thought it was so dense, very nuanced. And I come from a classical music world.
Yeah.
I'm a violinist.
Oh, shit.
What does she not do? You know what I mean?
I'm a Capricorn Asian woman,
only child,
parents. Yeah,
just, I played violin for like about 6 months. Yes. How did you get stopped the bad neck?
Though? Oh yeah, and then you grow the little sweaty patch right here. Yeah, it's
and the rosin.
I used to have
a rosin. And,
well, you know, I went to a mostly Asian American school where everybody played the violin. Okay. So if you don't play the violin, like you are not.
You're weird. Okay.
Yeah, all you right. are. Yeah, I wanted to belong so badly. and so it really like, and it was just like such a great movie about like cancel culture and. Like so it really brought me back to like, you know, Mahler, Wagner. Yeah. Mm. So I've been listening to concertos.
Tight.
Again. Oh. And I've been because I've been, you know, I've been usually listening to lo-fi music or like things that get me into a flow mode. But I've just been filling up my space with the things that I grew up listening to, and maybe even more so different repertoire, and like and it's really helped me like with focus and also stopping and listening to a certain section. And like, of course, listening to works by people who have written it, you know, these symphonies are incredible, right? So I've been listening to classical repertoire again. I've been listening to it on my walks. And also listening to neoclassical music. I love Woodkid. I don't know if y'all
familiar with him. Woodkid.
Woodkid, yeah. Okay. He is a French music producer, but now he also composes. So he did something for Caron's called Deserto. And his music is just so neoclassical mixed in with these tribal beats. Like, really interesting.
I love it.
I love him. I would love to collaborate with him one day. Like,
now we're putting that in the universe.
Put that out there.
It's it's going to be either Matthew Bellamy from Muse, who I respect a lot, or Woodkid.
Come on.
Okay. Thank you. And so that is what I've been listening to, what I've been watching. I just watched Past Lives.
I'm going to see that ASAP.
My God.
Please let me know.
I cried
so much in the cinema.
Oh, shit.
I cried so hard, I felt drunk the rest of the day.
Damn. That's a hard cry. I know what you're talking about, though.
No. It was, you know, I heard about, like, how hard, not how hard, but, like, how devastating it was going to make me. And then from the movie, I was like, I'm doing great. This is fine. I am fine. The last 10 minutes, I'm like, fuck this.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Such a perfect film. What am I reading? I read a lot, but right now I'm really late on this as well. But please. I think I was just in production for so long. But I, if y'all seen Made, with Margot Qualley.
Yeah.
So I think it was the Apple show.
Oh, yes, yeah. yes.
I watched that first.
Yeah.
I'm reading the book now by Stephanie Land, who it's her story.
Yeah.
And I'm halfway through the book, and it's just being able to watch the show, but like to really dive more in depth with how she paints the picture of, you know, people who work, you know, who work in people's houses and like the invisibility of people at that labor force. And also how the system like really doesn't help people and how heartbreaking it is.
Yeah.
So I definitely recommend it. I am learning a lot from it. And I have a few more that are coming down the line. But, have you guys read Outliers?
Yes.
Yeah, I love Outliers.
Malcolm Gladwell.
Yes, exactly.
Yes.
And you know, that's always a good example of just like, what is impossible? Yeah. And like, what is your concept of impossible? And like, what are the stats? But like, what is the outlier?
Yeah.
And it just really like recalibrates the way that you think about the world, you know, community, but like also people. Again, sociology in the micro and macro sense, macro sense. But I'm also interested in seeing like how technology affects us in this next go around. I don't know. I got high yesterday and I started watching Batman and Robin.
Yeah.
like George Clooney, Arnold Schwarzenegger, and like, I don't know. And I just watched the movie so high and I'm like, wow, this is so campy. And the way that it's done, like now watching it as a filmmaker versus when you're a kid, you're just like, oh, that's so easy.
Yeah.
Like, that would take nothing to make now.
Yeah.
That would take nothing to make now. And the fact that we're doing how fast we've come in terms of how we make our material now and where it's going now scares me a little bit, but it also excites me.
Yeah.
So we're in the Aquarian age, tearing down institutions, and we're also tearing down the way we think. So
that's fine.
That stay open.
Mind open always.
That's and what okay, I'm talking about. Mind
we,
open
we will
always.
Just reiterate, Roxy's DMs are open. It's been a pleasure, an honor. Oh, yeah. Thank you so much.
Two Writers.
Talking shit.
Talking shit.
Bye-bye.
Two Writers Talking Shit is an original podcast created by Melanie Mars and Saeed Crumple. Our producer is Kayla Guest. Our audio engineer is T. Kelly.
Listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or wherever you damn well please. All we ask is that you subscribe, rate us 5 stars, and give us a glowing review.
If you're not going to give us 5 stars or any glowing reviews, then why even log on? Save your rants for an open mic.
If you have any questions for us, and I do mean any, you can email us at twowriterstalkingshit@gmail.com. That's the number 2, and then writerstalkingshit@gmail.com.
See you next episode.
Bye.